So as I continue to deal with our server going out, we're doing these Facebook Live events commercial free. Plus, I'm still publishing some older shows on the website, so people are still getting their superhuman rate. In fact, I got comments today about a show that I published this morning, and people are like, man, this is amazing. Dr. Margie Pasquale, you know, talking about the post-workout carbohydrate myth and all this stuff. And I taped that show in 2007. And people, I just got an email from a guy in Greece. He's like, what a great show that is. And I said, I got to tell you the truth. I taped that in 2007. He couldn't believe it because it was such current information. Dr. DePasquale is a thought leader when it comes to sports nutrition. So check that show out. We've got something really good to talk about today. A lot of people are engaging in different types of therapeutic temperature modulating, let's say. Very hot, very cold, and my good friend Sean Wells has actually been researching this, and rightfully so, because today it's become a cottage industry. People are going and cryo-freezing their bodies, and they claim it does this. I've been using sauna since I was in my 20s. I love the sauna. I don't know that I believe it's doing any magic for me, but I like the experience of it. But there's a lot of people out there that are now saying, you know, heat is doing certain things. So you dug into this, right?
Yes, absolutely. And like you're saying, I think it's fascinating that the data is coming out with both hypothermic and hyperthermic regulation and adaptation. You know, one thing that's really fascinating that's taken place in our modern day society, Carl, is that there's thermoregulation. This phenomenon has taken place where we're 27, we're 66 degrees or, you know, somewhere in there. All day, every day. We don't have the variance. We don't have the hormetic response anymore, right?
Right.
And so that can be an issue to having the stimuli for adaptation. So we don't need the brown adipose tissue. We don't need the heat shock proteins. You know, some of these things that happen when we're exposed to temperature extremes and then temperature variation. You know, it's really interesting. It's like the polar bear club kind of thing, right? Like where, you know, jump in the ice cold water and they used to do that all the time. And I know in Rome, ancient Rome, that was popular with the hydrotherapy.
Listen, the Romans started saunas and steam rooms. When I went to Masada in Israel, well, I'm getting a really bad feedback right now. Do you hear that?
No.
Hold on a second. I don't understand what's going on. Yeah, I was getting a really bad feedback there. When we went to Masada, there was a 1,400-year-old steam room with double walls, and they had big vats of water that they had fire under, and the steam would just flow in through these big holes in the walls, and the tile work was amazing. It was 1,400 years old. So they've known about this for a long time.
Yeah, I actually just got back from Rome, and one of the cool things, this is kind of a little off topic, but I walked through the Colosseum. And I didn't know that they had naval battles as part of the what went on at the Colosseum. It wasn't just they filled the Colosseum up with water. This is crazy to me. This is just nuts. But it's amazing, like what the Romans were doing back then.
Yeah, pretty cool stuff. But okay, let's talk about heat for a second, because that's the one that most people have been in contact with at some point in their lives. Everybody either sat in a sauna or a steam room at some point in their life, whether they liked it or not. There's a lot of fascinating things that raising body temperature actually does. And if you heard my rant the other day about detoxing, we're not going to talk about detoxing here, because that's not what we're talking about. What we're talking about is the actual effects on your physiology from exposing it to extreme temperatures, which is something that would have happened to us from an evolutionary perspective anyway. But just getting in the sauna periodically, there was a study that was just published recently that shows that people who have issues with temperature, they get cold easily, they get warm easily, they're always uncomfortable. When they do sauna 3 days a week, that completely goes away. So that speaks to what you're talking about, that, you know, we don't have the hormetic effect of oscillating temperatures to make our body used to that.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. Like, I used to work in nursing homes as a chief clinical dietitian, and I remember, you know, your skin does get thinner as you get older. That tends to happen. And I remember so many of the elderly struggled with that. But, you know, it also makes sense that so many of the elderly were in the nursing home and they stopped going outside, right?
Yeah.
Being exposed to the winter. They stopped being exposed to the summer and they were thermoregulated, right? So it's kind of interesting. But, you know, another thing that's a phenomenon besides saunas is that Bikram yoga, which is a hot yoga. That's actually popular too. That would be another way to be exposed to heat that's similar to a sauna. But Dr. Rhonda Patrick, who's been on Tim Ferriss, Ben Greenfield, she's like a mitochondrial expert, worked with cancer, fascinating lady. She has Found My Fitness is her YouTube channel. It's worth following. But she's talked about hyperthermic conditioning. That's her term for it. And basically, you can get more accretion of muscle mass, a better capacity for stress tolerance. You can acclimate yourself to the heat, like you were just talking about. And this is all like independent of working out. So obviously, you know, and we'll go back to the cold later, but, you know, there's some interesting data with the cold that, you know, if you're swimming while being exposed to cold water, you don't have to be in quite as cold water. And same with exercise and heat. But if you just want to sit there, you can get almost all the benefits, but it just has to be a hotter temperature for the saunas.
Well, so for years, since I was in my 20s, I have been enjoying sauna. And I really do love the experience. In fact, stepping into a sauna, the smell and the sensation of heat brings back a memory of every time before that I've been in the sauna. So it's almost like I built equity into this rapid onset of feeling just by stepping into it, the smell of it. So that's very therapeutic in and of itself, but first of all. But Dr. Robert Gorder, who I am well acquainted with now, who lives and practices in Germany, was a UCLA trained physician and professor. And he was curing certain types of very aggressive cancers with hyperthermia therapy. And he's still doing it now, but he had to leave the United States to do it. The FDA got after him, and he left and went to Cologne, Germany. And he went to work at the Cologne Model Cancer Institute, which is now known as the Cologne-Gorder Cancer Institute, because he's had such an impact on them. But people don't realize what extreme heats can do. And I've had these conversations with him. He says it ramps up immune response, and it goes out and it's almost like it takes your body to a DEFCON 1. Is that the highest DEFCON 1? It takes your body to a DEFCON 1 where it says, okay, we really need to start working hard right now. And so that escalation in processes and function is very therapeutic for the body. But the only thing I want to say about that is you can take it to an extreme. If you're training hard every day and you're getting in the sauna every day, you can become depleted of minerals very, very rapidly. So you have to be careful about that. You have to be careful about that.
Right. And especially in a salt-phobic world that we live in. I mean, I've talked about this before, that, you know, sodium bicarbonate and all this data on all these things that are bound to the sodium. I think sodium plays just as big a role as being an ergogen as the other thing it's bound to, like the bicarbonate. And I think there's most athletes are not where they need to be. They're definitely hyponatremic.
Yeah.
And certainly I agree with that. Salt and the other electrolytes, definitely deficient in many athletes. You can see
that. And many Americans. Let's be honest here. In most Americans, because they're eating processed foods that are high in sodium and nothing else. You know, the thing you have to be careful about when you talk about minerals in general is we talk about one. We have like magnesium advocacy groups. All they do is talk about people taking more and more magnesium. What they don't realize is if you don't have adequate sodium in your diet, you don't absorb the magnesium. But, you know, then when magnesium gets so high and calcium is out of balance and potassium is out of balance, you have a host of new problems. And so when we see an imbalance in a mineral, we shouldn't supplement that mineral. We should supplement all minerals because we need to bring everything up if we're going to bring one thing up.
I agree. Yeah, there's sometimes there can be valences that play a role in conflicting with them. And then, of course, there's dosages that can play a role. But yeah, certainly, I agree that I think most people aren't getting those kind of things. And it's kind of like when you have bone issues, like that you're just taking calcium when it's calcium, magnesium, phosphorus, boron, you know, all these like silicon, you know, there's so many other things that are like a part of the bone mineral matrix beyond just calcium that need to be there in the right ratio. So that's an interesting thing about like the whole bone broth, you know, phenomenon, or maybe eating bones, or, you know, some of that kind of thing, is that, you know, getting back to the more paleo type of eating might make more sense than just, you know, taking a calcium supplement.
I agree 1,000%. So getting back to,
sorry, they're just really quick, the calcium, there is now risk that they're showing with calcification of the arteries. When you take too high a calcium and you're not getting the vitamin K2 and the, you know, the D3 with it, that you actually run more cardiovascular risk.
Yeah, absolutely. Talking about the heat for a second. So what are your thoughts on sauna and performance? Is it something that's more tilted towards recovery, or is there a performance aspect of it as well, you think?
No, there's performance. So I'm going to run down a list here. Improved cardiovascular mechanisms and lower heart rate, lower core body temperature, which makes sense, right? I mean, that's obvious because you're making those adaptations. You have a better sweat rate and better sweat sensitivity, and that's through thermoregulation. Increased blood flow to the skeletal muscle, which you can call perfusion. Reduced rate of glycogen depletion through the improved muscle perfusion, increased red blood cell count via EPO, which, right, you know, popular for, you know, blood doping and, you know, cyclists and all that kind of stuff, which means more oxygen transport to the muscles. So yes, I think, you know, you're having improved endurance, improved recovery, you're protecting your glycogen. I mean, there's all kinds of things going on. You're removing metabolic waste, you're improving metabolic nutrients being delivered. So absolutely, I mean, this is a, you know, marked improvement with heat acclimation.
Is there a point of diminishing returns? I was kind of saying before that too much is not a good idea either. What have you found in that area?
Well, so there's one study with a 30-minute sauna session time 2 times a week, which isn't bad, for 3 weeks post-workout, and that it increased the time to exhaustion by 32% over baseline in terms of endurance runners. And there was a 7.1% increase in plasma volume, 3.5% increase in red blood cell count, and a boost EPO. So, you know, that's impressive. But as far as diminishing returns, I mean, I think this is really, you're going to find this interesting. Let me run through these three examples, because this is really cool. So all these are two sauna sessions a week. So the first one is 2 20-minute sauna sessions at 80 degrees centigrade Celsius, which is 176 Fahrenheit, separated by 30-minute cooling period, elevated growth hormone levels to 2-fold over baseline. If you do two 15-minute sauna sessions at 20 degrees Celsius higher, which is 212 Fahrenheit, and that's dry heat, separated by 30-minute cooling period, resulted in a 5-fold increase in growth hormone. And then 2 1-hour sessions, which is really long, at 176 degrees Fahrenheit or 80 degrees Celsius for 7 days, was shown to increase growth hormone by 16-fold on the third day, which is insane. But yeah, I would say that this is, you know, with any type of adaptation and stimuli, especially like along these lines, I think especially with the heat, you know, that there is definitely diminishing returns. You can definitely, I mean, you've definitely heard of wrestlers in the past that were doing, you know, the body suits, you know, the sweat suits, and, you know, doing the cycle and the sauna, and they end up killing themselves trying to make weight. Yeah. You know, this is a dangerous thing, and it does have a lot to do with what you were talking about. One, hydration, and 2, electrolyte repletion, right? So, you know, the heart will stop working correctly. Your muscles can lock up. I mean, all kinds of things. So certainly there's risk, and I wouldn't go all in too crazy, but just do it until you feel that it's not at a level of comfort anymore. Sit in the sauna like you're talking about post workout, and maybe read some articles on your phone or do some mindful meditation or something else that has benefit as well.
I use that time to solicit new Amway subscribers.
Okay. I like it. Over the phone or just people that are sitting
there? I got a captive audience. I walk in, I stand in front of the door. They can't leave unless I move. So I say, hey, have any of you guys ever heard of Amway before? I actually do that as a joke when I walk in the gym, but now everybody knows that I do it as a joke. So
I love that.
But really, I mean, it's a thumbs up for heat, right? For thermal.
Yeah. So there's several other things too. So it increases and it's doing this induction of growth hormone through IGF-1, and so that's improving protein synthesis and also decreasing protein degradation. It's improving insulin sensitivity by upregulating the GLUT4 receptor. And they actually looked, there was a study with insulin-resistant obese diabetic mice. They were subjected to 30 minutes hyperthermic treatment 3 times a week for 12 weeks, 31% decrease in insulin levels, significant reduction in blood glucose, and a resensitization to the insulin. And again, that was by probably the GLUT4 receptor upregulation.
Better regulation of blood pressure, first of all. I mean, people who sit in the sauna have, like, on average, 10-point lower blood pressure before when they weren't sitting in the sauna. The other thing that's interesting about the sauna is the sauna actually influences gut microdiversity and shifts the population of Firmicutes to Bacteroidetes to a more lean person's environment, which means a slightly less effective absorption and more energy utilization. Because we see people who live in warm climates aren't just thin because the heat makes them sweat. It actually changes the diversity of the gut microbes towards what is considered a leaner model human being.
Which makes sense, right? Because that's great. I love that data. I didn't see that. But that makes sense in terms of what you would want the body to do in this scenario, that that energy should go towards cooling the body, actively cooling the body in these hypothermic scenarios, instead of that energy going to be stored as fat mass, right?
Right.
You need that more readily because you're exposed to heat. And that's a fascinating thing. I would love to look at the gut microbiome of those, like in the heat of Africa or the Sahara, versus someone who's in, Iceland or Greenland or, whatever.
I actually interviewed a scientist at the end of 2016 who published a study that looked at obesity, gut microbe diversity, and geolocation to the equator. And what they found out was exactly what we're talking about, that in the warmer climates, that's where I got the information from. The gut microbes change to, I think it's Bacteroidetes that are found in more lean people.
Yes.
And overpopulation of Firmicutes found in obese people, and it shifts It shifts that completely. So we have a question from Michael LePelt. He says, any comments on contrast showers and saunas? I have an opinion on this. What's yours?
Well, I think that's going to create more, again, like that's really the hyper hypo scenario, like where you're not only getting exposed to the stimuli of cold versus hot, but you're going through the rapid change, which is going to, I think you're going to get the best of both worlds. So you get the brown adipose tissue activity upregulation and the brown adipose tissue count, the number of brown adipose tissue cells increasing, which is great. And in terms of mitochondrial function and energy expenditure, all those kind of things being increased, but then you're also getting the heat shock proteins from, the heat being increased, and then you're improving your GLUT4, like you were talking about, the plasma volume, the stroke volume going to the heart, which lowers blood pressure. you know, you're getting improved IGF-1 and GH, all those things. I mean, it's certainly, I think that's the best of both worlds. And that kind of goes back to those people that, I mean, there is like a club, right? It's kind of like that pool, yeah. Like where they do that, they jump in the ice water, the sauna, you know, well, like.
So that was my ritual every single day. I would sit in a 180-degree sauna at the gym, generally 20 minutes, and then I would leave and go right in the shower and turn the cold shower on. And people would comment that they hear me gasping in the stall, like joking, like, you know, what were you doing in there? Did you have somebody in there with you? And I said, no, I call it my ticker test. I figure if I don't stroke or have a cardiac event when that cold water hits me, I'm pretty safe for the rest of the day. And so, but it's amazing because you actually feel revived after a hard workout by going from the sauna to the ice cold shower. It's almost like a brace. It's like everything, the benefits of all the sauna kick in, and then you have this bracing effect where it kind of holds you back together and says, okay, now stand up straight. You know what I mean? It's really amazing. And I love it. I love it.
Right. Exactly. And so, going back to brown adipose tissue, just to talk about that. So one, you only have about 5 ounces on you. Like let's say 1400 grams. And typically it's around the collarbone, the clavicle. And I think maybe the evolutionary reason for that is to protect the core. You know, like maybe if there was damage to the limbs or something like that. But it's almost all located here around the core. And they only discovered this like in 2007 in humans. Right. And it was like when they were doing PET scans looking for cancer. And these things lit up on the PET scans with all this activity. But normally, we only thought that it was for babies. And it's because up until 6 months, they lack the ability to shiver. And right. Shivering is a way to create thermogenesis, right? So it's really interesting that, and there's been studies done, like with grains of paradise. I don't know if you looked at that grains of paradise extract. But it actually is similar to capsaicin, but it upregulates the activity of brown adipose tissue. But what's interesting when they did the studies is there's certain people they had to exclude because they just had really poor brown adipose tissue activity. So they only took the brown adipose tissue positive people. And again, you know, I wonder like what that is. And my thought is those people are probably the people that are tightly thermoregulated. Mm-hmm. They don't like being out in the cold or out in the heat. And so they're experiencing those shifts and therefore they don't need it. But my thought is also, I mean, the brown adipose tissue, I mean, just like 3 hour period of cold exposure, extra 250 calories. I mean, it's market. This one guy that has been working in this area, Cronus is his name. He's been working on all these different devices, but he started looking into it because he's like consuming 12,000 calories a week. And he looked at Michael Phelps, who's consuming 12,000 calories a day. Mm-hmm. And he's like, what's going on here? You know, it's like, that's pretty crazy. And obviously he expends a lot of energy swimming, but there had to be something more. And that is, in fact, like what you see with his data is that even you know, when you're swimming in 90 degree water, you're at about a 0.9 all the way up to even like a 1.0 on your respiratory quotient. So that means that you're basically a carb burner. And when you get in 70 degree water and swim, or you get in 60 degree water and just sit there, you're at a 0.7. which means you're all fat burning. That's where you want to be, is 0.7. So it's fascinating that it doesn't even have to be that cold. And this is why I think the cold water immersion, either through a cold water plunge, you know, I think plunge is even better than a shower.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, no doubt.
I think that's even better than doing the cryotherapy. I think cryotherapy, you're getting some of the hormetic response, you know, maybe to the cold, but you're not getting the same brown adipose tissue activation that you'd get with cold water immersion.
Because it's really is colder on your skin. And I mean, it feels warm on your skin too. So I'm not a big fan of brown adipose tissue. We've talked about brown adipose tissue on the show for pretty much a decade now. And the last tissue I did about was the enzyme responsible for browning fat. When it gets low, the brown fat goes away too. Man, there's a horrible feedback coming back on here. So what I've found was that it's easier to build muscle than to try to convert some small amount of fat into brown fat. I have something wrong here. There we go. So I kind of feel like it's easier to build muscle than to convert fat to brown fat. And you can build so much more muscle that's metabolically expensive. That's going to lead to being leaner than you can build brown fat, even if you can max out all the brown fat you can build. That's just my opinion of it.
It's tough. Like when the browning the fat, from what I've read, it's like a quarter as metabolically active as your true brown adipose tissue. And it's that hormone irisin that they've been like, Bruce Spiegelman, who's like a Harvard professor, he's been looking at it since I think 2010. But there's like a growth factor, BMP7, that's involved in it and some other proteins. But yeah, you're right. Like it's tough. Like nobody's really come up with the biggest answer, but like this, I like this guy Crony's, his approach where he's you know, freezing himself thin. He did like, let's see, this is really interesting. So he did, a gallon of water in the morning, 1 mile shiver walks, shower in the barely warm water, not cold water. So, you know, think maybe 60 to 70, sleep without the covers. And he lost 26 pounds in 6 weeks. And that was three times the weight loss as when he was just on his 12,000 calories a week and cardio strength training.
So, but you think that has nothing to do with brown fat. That has to do with the core of the body needing to regulate its body temperature and work harder because the outer world is colder.
I think it's both. I mean, they're showing, I know that you're not a big fan of it, but I think that the existing brown adipose tissue is upregulated in its activity. And they've shown that it's more active. There's more mitochondrial activity taking place. So whether it's doing that all in and of itself, or it's maybe some kind of signaling, I mean, there is something happening with it. I don't have the answer. And like I said, that Bruce Spiegelman, who's been working on it for years, as far as pharmaceuticals, hasn't been very lucky with it.
Right.
But some importance to it. The level of importance, I don't know, but it's interesting nonetheless.
Yeah, absolutely. So in your opinion, the real value in cold therapy is what?
Well, I know, and you might know this from doing your cold plunges, and certainly people that have done cryotherapy do this. I know I struggle with, I was in a car accident years ago, and I had two discs replaced in my neck. And, you know, I struggle with bad inflammation. And when I get under, you know, the cold water, especially like around my head and neck, and I let it hit it, or if I dive into a cold pool or the ocean, I mean, not only do I feel more alert, but, and you know, which isn't surprising, you know, it seems obvious, oh, you feel more alert because you're like, you know, cold shock, right? But, you know, at the same time, I mean, you don't feel that like when you jump into hot water per se. Mm-hmm. Like the cold water, I also feel like this clarity. And not only do you have, if you deal with systemic inflammation like I do, you deal with neuroinflammation. So that brain fog, you know, which certainly is one reason why I do like a ketogenic diet at times, or, you know, something like that can raise ketones like caprylic acid or something like that. But I think that I get a level of clarity that I carry throughout the day. I have less pain, you know, less inflammation, and that's been shown, you know, time and time again. And there's been studies with depression, actually on both sides, with depression with the sauna therapy, cancer patients, and then depression with just people that had severe depression with the cold water exposure.
Interesting. Yeah, I'm a big believer, and I always have been. I never put a lot of thought into it. It wasn't like as though I was doing it for anything other than it really felt good to punctuate a workout with, you know, a nice hot sweat, heart pounding. When I lived in Vegas, I used to take a loofah in with me, and I used to loofah my whole body, which used to piss everybody in the sauna off. Like, you know, oh, you know, that's disgusting, dead skin. Now I shave in the sauna, and I got these old fakakas telling me, oh, you can't shave in the sauna. That's against the health code. I'm like, dude, you're sweating on the floor over there. You stand there barefoot. You're worried about me, shaving in the sauna, giving you a disease or something like that. But I love to shave in the sauna. You get the closest shave in the sauna, the best. You don't need
shaving. In the sauna?
Sauna. You sit in the sauna for 15 minutes, you break a real good sweat, a real good oily dripping off your face sweat, and just take a dry razor and go slow. Go slow and just pull it down along your face. You'll feel the whiskers breaking off on it. And you'll get you'll come out of the sauna, and when your skin cools off, you'll have if you normally get a 3 o'clock shadow the next day, you won't get it till the day after. The best shave in the world is in a dry sauna. You just gotta wait and sweat first a little bit.
Right.
When I was a kid, my father was an attendant at a health spa on Queens Boulevard. And it was called the Shelton Health Spa. And there was this mafioso that used to sit in the sauna with all his gold jewelry on and shave. His name was Tom. And he would shave. And he'd say to us young guys, I was like maybe 18 years old, 17 years old. And he'd go, "You ever shave in the sauna, kid?" Like, "No, Mr. Shiga, I don't know. I don't shave yet," you know, something like that. He goes, "Wait till you shave in the sauna," he'd tell me. And it's the truth. Like when I was in my 20s living in Las Vegas, I started shaving in the sauna, and that's the only way I want to shave.
What is it about the mafia and saunas? Like, because like the, or steam rooms, there's something about that whole thing. Like, seems like a lot of things are conspired in those areas.
I think it harkens back to the old country. Like you were just talking about Rome. I think it harkens back to the old country. Those types of things were ritualistic, and they were ingrained in people, and they were talked about as generations and generations cultivated. They would talk about the steam room, the sauna, walking after a big meal. Like that was a big thing amongst the Italians. They would, after a big meal, everybody goes out for a walk. But anyway, all right, so the bottom line is execute and use these wisely. They can benefit you. If you're not doing it now, you have an opportunity to leverage some temperature extreme therapies.
Exactly. And I think what we're talking about with the cold and the hot is going back to, to summarize that all these things you're seeing, like with the heat, it's basically not only better health, but more muscle mass. And then with the cold, you're seeing less body fat. So again, you know, this goes back to we were exposed to extreme temperatures. We were exposed to temperature variants. Think if you lived in the desert. It's not just hot, right?
Hot
and very cold. You know, so like what someone was just talking about, like with that contrasting, that would be your experience potentially in the desert.
Yeah.
And couldn't happen in 30 minutes. So, you know, this we're shielded from this level of evolution and adaptation. And that could be one of the big reasons why we have less muscle mass and more body fat.
Yes, I agree. And I'm sure it affects sleep too, because I'm sure that part of the thermosignaling that affects circadian rhythm isn't even being discussed yet. So Khalid Ha, who lives in Algeria, said, sauna improves left ventricle ejection fraction in patients with chronic congestive heart failure, according to the American Journal of Medicine. That speaks to stroke, and that speaks to what you're talking about. The heart relaxes.
The plasma volume improves. Yeah, exactly. So that's great. That's great data. I would say if anyone has a cardiac issue, to not go full bore at this, because I don't want us to get sued from this conversation. So there is some potential risk, but obviously
you shouldn't. If you have a heart problem, you shouldn't get in a sauna without drinking a Red Bull first.
Great. Now we're definitely getting sued.
That's funny. Well, anyway, I haven't been doing it, but I'm inspired to start doing it again. I don't know that I could do it after my training because I have to get into the studio, but I definitely can make time in the evening to do it. And I think most people can. And you know what the worst part is? I have an infrared sauna at home. I could get in a sauna every day if I wanted to. It just doesn't get hot enough for me. The sauna at the gym gets to 180 degrees. I love that heat.
You know? So I don't have all the data on that, but that's something that I'm looking into, is just light and how important. Obviously, like, we, you know a lot about blue light and, you know, that role it plays in our circadian rhythm with melatonin and everything. And it's fascinating, but just blue light alone, you know, I like to use blue light first thing in the morning, and then you think about reduced blue light in the evening. But red light is fascinating too, and there's a lot of stuff that's going on there in terms of, you know, like cold laser therapy and just red light therapy. And I think it's like the 660 nanometers wavelength in terms of reducing inflammation, improving recovery time. So I think that's really cool that you, that's actually something I was looking at in terms of my rebuild of my house, is not only doing a sauna, but doing like what you're talking about, the infrared thing, and trying to get that lighting that's supposed to help with recovery. I think that's a double whammy. I think there's so much data that's yet to come out on all these different light wavelengths and the impact they have on us, and even ones that aren't even visible to us.
Well, and see, and that's the, and that's why I keep coming back and saying the dermatological industry and association has done more to contribute to the underpinnings of illness today with their stupid assertions to stay out of the sun, stay covered up in the sun, use sunblock in the sun. So all these wavelengths that we're isolating and going, well, this wavelength does this, they all come out of the sun at the same time. So if you spend time in the sun, you're getting this 880 nanometer, 660, 440, 320. You're getting it all. You're getting it all.
Right. Right.
Get out in the sun. That's the answer.
Cosmic radiation. Yeah, exactly. I agree. And that is frustrating that people are scared to get outside. And then that plays another role in what we're just talking about with the temperature variation, right? Yeah. They're scared to go outside. And then, so the elderly are very scared about getting skin cancer, and they stop having the ability to thermoregulate, and they feel hot and cold all the time, and they just want to stay inside. And if I go outside, I'll get burned, you know, and it's just a downward spiral. You're right. That is frustrating.
Well, this is good information, and people can take advantage of it. Take advantage of a sauna. Take advantage of a cold immersion bath if you have one at your gym. All gyms should have them, by the way.
Yeah.
Exactly. Last time I actually had access to one was when I was in Puerto Vallarta, no, Cancun, on vacation, and they had one in the spa, and it was so just beautiful. It was just a big round hole, and you just jumped in. They had a little ladder that you could hold on to and stay in there, and it was so nice and cold. But anyway, do we need to mention anything else? Are we plugging anything for you today? Any upcoming events?
I have a website, zonehalo.com, and I have a newsletter that's going out. I have my social media that's under Zone Halo, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. So look those up, and I appreciate the support.
Okay, and we'll talk to you soon, Sean, okay?
Okay. Thanks, Carl.
Thanks a lot. All right, so there you have it. That's hopefully the feedback wasn't too bad. It was on my end, but I'll see on the tape. I can probably clear it up. But anyway, we have the Blueprint Power Hour tomorrow. Hope that you can be there for that. And I'm out.